Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage of the trial of Alex Murdaugh. I'm Tony Bruschi. We now head to the courtroom for segment number 5 here on day 19 of the trial of Alex Murdaugh.
All right, I'm going to ask you about Yusuf Farrow. Are you the one who actually operates the Farrow equipment?
I do, but in this particular time, somebody else did.
And did your equipment, has it been calibrated recently?
Yes, we calibrate every year.
Every what? Sorry?
Every year.
Did you actually operate it this night?
No, I believe Michael Whitley, who is a biomedical engineer in my office, I believe he was the one that day that was doing the scanning.
You describe Farrow as the time of flight laser. Is that your testimony?
Yes, it uses a laser, and it creates points. It creates a point cloud.
Is it fair to say that it's not actually a time-of-flight laser, it's a phase-based laser? Would that be more accurate?
I have no idea.
So you don't know?
I don't know.
All right, beginning at, if just toward the, just the very beginning of the slide works. No, the first slide, just the beginning of the presentation, the defense exhibit. Yeah, like slide 1. Did you do the addition? I know that we're going to get to it, but there's some individuals you put in the Farrow report. Were you the one who actually added that 3D render, or was someone else do it?
No. I had several engineers help me on this project. So Aaron Kiefer is an engineer in my office. He did a lot of the work on the point cloud. And Matt Kiefer, actually his brother, did work with taking those scanned people and turning them into shooters. So I would say 5 or 6 engineers in my office have worked on this particular project.
All right. What we're seeing here is a quail. What's called the quail pen. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
And again, this is not your picture. This was the one taken from the night of the incident.
This is a crime scene picture the night of the murders.
Okay. And next exhibit, please, exhibit 63. Would this be a close up of that?
Yes.
And the panel here. That's a paper product. I think you already testified to it, but that's a paper type product.
Yes.
You can actually see it's like bending, warped because it got wet.
Yes.
So it's pretty thin.
Yes.
All right, and the next slide, please. Now this is what's purported to be a projectile hole. Is that your understanding as well?
Yes, that is a projectile hole.
And you testified, I think you testified about the... What did you call this indentation on the right side of that hole?
I called it a white mark. The bullet's coming in at 41 degrees, kind of from the right. So that represents where the tip of the bullet first touched the cardboard or the fiberboard.
Do you, and I think you already testified this, but you have no formal training or experience or certifications in crime scene investigations. Is that correct?
I've answered that. It all comes from experience, my education.
And are you aware that there's a margin of error for the angles that may be measured in a projectile, especially if it's a soft paper product?
Sure. There can be, and also depends on how you measure it. So I took what Special Agent Worley measured. Like I said before, looked like our angle varied a little bit based on it didn't match up with the other physical evidence. That's why I picked a range. I picked a range of 1.5 to 3 degrees.
Keep going. Next one, please. And right here, we're seeing a metal dowel. Is that your understanding of what that is?
I don't know if it's metal or fiberglass, but it's some type of material like that that's going to be straight.
And on top of it is an angle measurer. Is that
yes.
fair to say? And they're sitting on top of that hole, which is essentially a paper product. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And no projectile was actually recovered from this direction of shot. Is that correct? Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding.
All right. If you wouldn't mind skipping forward to Exhibit 35. How tall is that doghouse at its highest point?
Probably going to be about 4 feet tall.
What are you relying on when you say that?
This is Special Agent Worley's notes.
Does your ferro scan make measurements of items? I think you testified to that.
It does. You know, if you wanted me to give you my measurement of it, I would, you know, have to open it up. It might take a while if you want to take a break.
So you don't know off the top of your head?
I do not have the doghouse height memorized.
All right, moving forward. And I think we saw here, this is the entry spot of the projectile into the doghouse. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. Moving forward. Moving forward. And this, again, would be the same thing, a rod, but this time in a more firm. You would agree the wood in this case is much more firm than the quail pen paper product, right?
Yes, it's thicker.
And the bullet, which appeared to have gone through the doghouse and was recovered from inside, is that your understanding, having reviewed the crime scene?
Yes.
Crime scene reports?
Yes.
And do you have any formal study, experience, training, or otherwise on what a bullet might do when it strikes wood or whatever the interior of the dog pen held, including the earth?
Well, again, it's the same line of questioning. It would be based on my experience. I can't say that I've ever done any specific testing for wood. I've certainly reviewed papers and literature concerning such, but typically I don't go into that area of ballistics. I look more at impact marks and then just the flight path of the bullet, because that's just physics.
And then I'm going to fast forward to some of your ferro images, if you wouldn't mind, scoot forward a little bit more. Keep going, please. All right, here. And these, the body that's laying there covered in a sheet, that was added after the fact. That's not part of the ferro scan. Is that right?
That is correct. That was added as well as the evidence markers.
All right. And I know the markers we see on this picture is just representative. There's the placards. And this is this the one where you tried to merge kind of what the placards were with the FaroScan?
Yes.
And the little circular X's, is that the computer-assisted drawing that you made based on the measurements performed by Special Agent Worley?
That's correct.
All right. Okay. All right, if you would mind scoot forward to the where we start with these green lines. There you go. All right, we're looking at exhibit, it doesn't even say, but exhibit with the two lines spread out. Is that the representative of the two different angles that were noted on this on the quail pen?
Yes.
So what, do you know which one's which? Which one's the 1 degree and which one's the 3?
Well, the 3 degree is going to slope towards the ground quicker. So that would be the bottom line. And then the 1.5 slopes less, you know, it's more gradual slope. So it would be the top line.
Going forward one. And here's where you inserted a 3D person as a 5'2 person. Is that who you inserted there?
Yes.
Okay. And you chose to insert a 5'2 individual shooting from the hip in that manner that aligns with that green line. Is that what you did?
Yes.
And nowhere on here is any other individual on that green line. Is that correct? You didn't put any other images here. You only chose to put a 5'2 individual slinging a gun on his hip.
Well, that's what matches. If the person was any taller, then they would have to be towards the quail pen. If they were any shorter, then they would be behind the shooter. Or the shooter would be in a different posture.
And do you have any idea if a bullet can ricochet?
Of course.
They can, right?
Yes.
If they hit something.
Yes.
And you don't know, because we didn't recover that bullet, but you don't know if that was a ricochet, is it? Is it possible?
It could be possible, but I don't see any evidence from the crime scene investigation that it was a ricochet.
Okay, but it's possible, right?
I think it's very unlikely because of the hole in the side of the quail pen. Usually when a bullet ricochets, it'll get upset. So the hole in the quail pen should have been bigger.
So the shooter, according to your lines here, the shooter could have been anywhere on that line. Is that correct? Anywhere on that line?
Yes.
All right, if we keep going. This is just another one showing them same posture, just on different points of those lines. Is that accurate?
Yes.
So as long as that's done, and we'll not worry about the 5'2", 11-year-old, but if anyone's on that line, it could have been accurate, right? If that gun is anywhere on that line, according to you, it could have been accurate. Is that right? It could have been that shot.
Yes.
Anywhere.
That's what I explained is that the line, by definition, establishes where the weapon is. Then the next step would be to figure out where the person is, or where the shooter is.
I just want to be clear. Anywhere from this point all the way, I guess, until it hits the – it would eventually hit the ground, right?
Correct.
Anywhere until it hits the ground, somewhere back behind where the bodies are located, it's your testimony that it is that is consistent with what you're seeing.
Yes.
As long as that gun is on that line.
Yes, sir.
So we can just – remove the 11-year-old from the equation. As long as that gun's on that line, it fits with what you're saying, your mathematics is saying, is lines up. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And you didn't provide any renders of any other adult-sized human beings, perhaps kneeling, did you?
Repeat that.
You didn't do any other renders along these lines of an adult-sized human being kneeling on the ground while shooting, did you?
No. What I did do is consider that because, I mean, obviously from your question, you kind of can see that in your mind. Okay.
I'm just asking for a yes or no.
Well, I did. I did. Let me explain.
He's attempting to answer the question. Again.
Okay. So what I did for that question, because I figured that you would ask me it, but... what I did was at 1 foot increments from the quail pen, all the way out to 60 feet. And at 60 feet, you're getting pretty close to where that line goes underground. It actually goes underground about 73 feet, okay? So what I did was I looked at the height of the shooter's hand, just like we did this morning in front of the jury. And the other thing I looked at was where the center of the shell casings, the empty casings were, okay? And I looked in a 12-foot circle around the shell casings, like the center of those shell casings, figuring that everything that I've seen, typically these rifles are going to be 8, 10, 12 feet, big variable. And it's just, you know, just a rough number. This is what I did, though. First thing you look at is that Alex is 76 inches tall. I measured to his knee is 25 inches. So that means that if he went down on one knee, his shoulder is still 51 inches above the ground. And if he shouldered the rifle in a kneeling position, he still can't make the quail shot because the muzzle would be above where the hole is. So that's number one. So the more you back him up, then it just gets more and more improbable. So then what I said was this. So I looked at this, and the height of the shooter's hand, whoever the shooter was in whatever posture they were in, was between, assuming a 12-foot, big 12-foot radius circle. So however big that is, 24-foot circle around the shell casings. The shooter's hand is 16.2 to 27.6 inches above the ground. So that's basically 2 feet above the ground. So that's why it only fits. You said 11-year-old kid, but it only fits with a short person. Or with some bizarre shooting posture that doesn't match an aiming position or a normal shooting position or just an abnormal shooting position. That's where I'm coming from is, and I invite you, I mean, with the blackout here, if you want to, try to put this gun 27.6 to 16.2 inches and tell me that that's not somebody that's very low to the ground.
Answer me this. How far off the ground is that gun right there in the 12-year-old's hand?
Which one?
A 12-year-old.
Jackson is over.
Which shooter?
Doesn't matter.
There's nothing in the record about a 12-year-old shooting this gun.
Jackson's overruled.
Let's go with the back guy. I'll call him the far shooter.
How high is that gun?
So he is 33 feet from the quail pen. And if you look at that, which is the 1.5 at 33, yep, the bottom of his hand is going to be like right there at that 28-inch mark.
Where's the line located right there? The line where the barrel, according to you?
At 33 feet, the muzzle.
The muzzle.
33 feet for the rear shooter.
Thirty-nine inches.
Yep.
Do you have a tape measure? Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
If we back it up 10 feet. What's the distance? What's the green line at? 10 feet back, so 40 feet.
It would be 36.5.
36.5. That's 3 feet, 3 feet, 5.5 inches. Is that right?
That is correct.
My finger, that look about right?
Yes.
Right there?
Yes.
Right there?
Yes.
But we got this. We got your renders that you went with are these two, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you wouldn't fast forward a little bit. Right here, okay. So now we got, what's the angle of this doghouse that you calculated?
That's 14 degrees.
All right, and the shooter, the little youth there, the youth is how far away from that?
8.4 feet.
And how high off the ground is that green line where he's standing? Little guy.
The muzzle is 29 inches above the ground.
29 inches?
Maybe 30.
30 inches. So right here?
30? Yes.
So 30 inches when you're up close right next to that doghouse. So what happens then when you back? I see the line. It's going upwards. So what happens when you back up? I mean, soon it's going to be over the little guy's head, right?
Yes.
Okay. But what happens if you're not such a little guy? If you back up, I don't know, let's back us up 5 feet, what happens?
Let's see, so that would be about
47.4. 47.4. Let's see, is that about right?
Yes.
I can bring it closer.
Yes.
47, you see it? Finger?
Yes.
Okay. 47.4. It's right there.
Yes.
I'm glad we could demonstrate those heights to the jury. Thank you. If you would fast forward a little bit more about, it doesn't have an exhibit number, but like five slides. Right. Yeah, right here is fine. That's good. That's good. Now, and I just want to be clear, you talk about casings. It's cartridge casings, and you're aware that shotguns have shells and rifles have cartridges. Is that correct? Is that correct? Is that your understanding?
I call it a rifle cartridge, but a rifle cartridge would be the bullet and the casing and the charge. The charge, the gunpowder inside the casing, but I call them rifle casings.
Okay. Well, I mean, before you just called it shell casings, I just want to be clear. All right. So and you talked about, I know you spent some time talking about the ejection of cartridge casings from a rifle or an AR style rifle. But you have no training or experience in that other than the studies you've personally conducted. Is that right?
That's correct. In literature, which again, for this rifle, it's supposed to be 3 o'clock to 4:30, which is 45 degrees behind, but it can be forward. It can be straight out to the side.
And I'm just tapping into common sense here, but you weren't at the scene in the night of the murders. Is that right?
I was not there.
And so is it possible that cartridge casings were moved?
Yes.
Is it possible that cartridge casings were ejected in an unorthodox manner?
Yes.
Is it possible that cartridge casings were ricocheted off of something, hit something and ricocheted?
Yes.
Okay. So where they laid, and this is just, again, tapping into common sense, not your engineering background, but where they laid may not necessarily be where they fell that night. Is that fair to say?
Yes. You're looking for just the area. For instance, if you're thinking about a shooting position 60 feet away, it makes no sense. But anywhere in that 24 feet that I'm talking about, yes, because there's casings there.
And here, what are we showing here? Remind me again what this, and I think there's one either. I think there's one before it too, an exhibit before. What are we seeing here with the intersection of the three lines? What are you saying?
I'm saying that the two shots made in two different directions can be made from approximately the same spot.
Does that assume, though, that someone's shooting from approximately the same spot? Does that assume that right there? This is assuming someone's in the general same area when they shoot.
Well, I used a constant height shooter, put them on the trajectories, and they end up in the same spot.
Is it possible that someone shoots from one position and then moves to another position before they shoot again? Is that possible?
Sure.
Okay. And along your lines, it's very possible that someone could have shot over here, and again, they were maybe a bigger person than the 12-year-old, and someone could have then moved before they shot again. Is that a possibility? Is that possible?
Of course. Well, I mean, that's what this slide depicts, is the shooter moving.
Right. Is it possible that they were back here and back here and moved maybe just a little bit more than the 2 feet you put on your drawing.
No, they would have to change their shooting posture. That's kind of the whole point is. It's like, for instance, you know, if you want to, like your line of questioning, let's say that the shooter is laying down or on one knee, then stands up and shoots from the hip. I don't know if that's really consistent with a moving shooter, but it's my understanding from what people have determined and what I've heard in expert reports from the state is that they think the shooter was moving. So I was thinking that it doesn't have to be, but what's most likely is that somebody is walking around shooting a gun.
Okay. Again, you weren't there. You have no firearms training. Is that right? Or certifications? Or crime scene training or certifications. Is that right?
I was not there.
So this is your best guess. Is that what it is?
No, that is not a guess. So Let me finish. That is based on all of the engineering principles, the physical evidence that was collected by both myself and Special Agent Worley. That is the physical evidence. Now, as you've done today, you can think about alternatives, and there very well can be alternatives, but you have to look at how likely the alternatives are. And that's what I'm doing here. There's always going to be variables. You can move things around, but I think as I've tried to get across today is that you draw a conclusion when you look at the evidence.
And you're here to say, to testify to these jurors, that your most likely answer is that it was a 12-year-old, two 12-year-olds at 5'2".
Your Honor, there's been no testimony that two 12-year-olds are involved in this anyway, misstating the facts.
Sustain the objection.
You're saying, though, that 2'5", which we can all guess approximates what size individual or age of individuals, that's your best guess of what went on that night?
It's not a guess. And again, it's not two individuals. It could be one person moving slightly there. But that is not a guess. That is my opinion. And I've tried to explain it to the court as best as I possibly can.
Exhibit 50, I believe it's 53, right there. Did this line account for the trajectory of the bullet either going through glass, other objects, or a human being?
Well, as we've discussed before, I would not anticipate any deflection through the glass, but there could have been some deflection through the body. So what that would account for is that where I'm standing or where that string is could have moved a little bit going through the body, but I think everybody's agreed that the shotgun is inside the door, so that would limit how far you could move the shotgun side to side based on deflection due to contacting something solid inside the body.
All right, so I didn't hear a yes or no. Did it account for any the projectile traveling through a human body, glass, or any other objects that were then located in that room that night? Does it account for that? Yes or no?
No, it doesn't account for it, but you could see, you know, how that has to change or could change, because the amount that you could move the shotgun around from that position is limited by the opening in the doorway.
And same thing for the green laser lines we saw earlier. Does that account for the projectile passing through a human body, wood, any other object that it passed through? Did your calculations account for that trajectory?
Well, that path is a straight line path. It could have passed through a human body. you know, it passed through the layers of the quail pen, but it's traveling straight at that point.
Did your calculations, and I'm going to ask it again because I need a yes or no answer, did your calculations account for the projectiles in the other examinations, the green line ones? Did it account for the projectiles passing through an item such as wood or a human body? Did it account for that?
No, I did not put there that the projectile somehow interacted with anything else and was deflected.
All right, I'm going to go over a few variables, if you wouldn't mind. So variables in doing all these calculations are, would you agree, it's where the gun was held. That's a variable.
Not for the trajectories.
So you won't admit, you won't concede that where the gun was held is a variable in a calculation such as yours.
Which calculation?
It doesn't matter. We're talking about either your shotgun calculation or your rifle one. Was where the gun held a variable that you have to account for in making this determination? Where the gun was held physically?
Not for the shot trajectories.
All right. Will you concede then that it was a variable in the AR-300 blackout scenario?
No, the shot trajectories, it doesn't matter where the gun is being held.
So where the gun's held in your mind makes no difference?
No, the gun is on the shot trajectory. I think I've explained that.
All right. Is it a variable of how the gun was held?
No.
Not a variable. Is it a variable if the party shooting was moving?
Again, no. The barrel of the gun was on that shot line, in my opinion.
Is it a variable if the party that the bullet would have potentially passed through was moving? Is that a variable?
No.
Is it a variable to you if the party was jumping or ducking? Is that a variable to you?
No.
Is it a variable if the party was maybe turning side to side? Is that even a variable?
Not for what I've done.
Okay, so you're saying no to everything I just asked, and all of those, you would agree, all of those variables that I listed include motion. Is that right?
Yes, those would all be if you were trying to figure out the orientation of the person that was shot, which is something that I did not do, and that's something I don't do. It's not my field of expertise.
Anything further? Let's stand while we're indulging. Okay.
All right, and further to the variables, I think you just said is it not a variable to you? I'm trying to ask this as close as possible. Sorry, strike that. Is it a variable if the person that is being shot is moving? Is that a variable to you?
That is not a variable to me.
And is it a variable to you if the person who's doing the shooting is moving?
That is not a variable to me.
Would you agree, though, in general, people do move?
Yes, in my experience, okay. People move.
That's it. No further questions.
So much to straighten out. So let's deal with his last questions. About the variables. If you're an expert, I'm going to give you a hypothetical real quick. Bullet hole 10 feet up, bullet hole 5 feet up.
What does that, tell you?
And the bullet's descending.
Right. And if you put a dial through that, would you see where it possibly came from and where it possibly went?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, it's a line, correct?
Yes.
So what does knowing where the gun was being held have to do with any of that?
It has no bearing on the physics of the flight of the bullet. It may have something to do with maybe where the shooter was positioned relative to the weapon, right? Or, you know, if you know, some other variable, but I'm not testifying about those subject matters.
Right. So all the, where, you know, well, let me ask you this. The data you relied on for this trajectory, the trajectories, was that generated by SLED?
Yes.
And so, did they indicate any evidence of ricochet?
No.
Did they indicate any evidence of bullet passing through a person?
No.
Didn't they test the one bullet they found in the dog shed for DNA and tissue or some sort of organic matter?
Yes.
Didn't find any?
No.
So you're basically just saying this is the line. Based on the SWED, Agent Worley putting a dial through and then figuring out the angle, correct?
Yes.
The two people you put here are based on the angle from the dog, from the quail pen going down. It was an upward shot, correct?
You cannot lead the witness. Though there, I've heard no objections to it.
I haven't heard any objections either, Your
Honor. Well, the court is objecting. You cannot lead the witness.
I'm trying to cut to the chase. I apologize. You were asked a question about the number of pellets. Did you review Agent Worley's report of her notes based on her visit to the location on July 16, 2021.
Yes.
Let me hand you these to see if it refreshes your memory.
You look through those. Okay.
It was
right.
Any objection to putting this in data? Offer this in evidence, Your Honor.
Submitted without objection.
Just go to the tape right there. This is a tape. And then this.
Okay, how about take it down a little bit? Well, no, that's okay. That's fine. So what is being recorded in this document and by who? It's a SLED report, right?
Yes, it's just a listing of the observations that Special Agent Worley was observing at the crime scene.
Okay, so let's go down to the bottom of this page, okay? There's that shadow. What's that about?
Okay. So tell me what that says. What does that mean?
Those are the following bullet defects in feed room, the doghouse, the small animal cage, and the workshop were scaled, labeled, and photographed.
Okay, so what is the defect A, B, C, D, and E?
Those are five projectiles from the in the feed room window.
And I think we previously heard those are buckshot pellets?
Yes.
You can't lead the witness.
Okay. Go to the next page, please. So how many is that?
Five.
Okay, keep going. Top of the page, please. Okay, and so it can. What happens here? Defect F, G, and M.
F and G are projectile entered the interior side of the window. Defect K is a possible defect in the exterior side of the window screen.
And that accounts for how many pellets?
You got seven.
Okay, and how many pellets were there?
Nine.
Okay. Is this where you got your information that you were asked about by the state?
Yes, and I mean, there was a report by Tom Bevel. He talked about the evidence. The evidence been listed. So there are several documents that you could go to find the stuff that was collected at the site.
Okay, and then going down, doghouse, this would be, what is that? What does that cover?
Maybe push it down.
Push it down just a little bit.
Just a little bit. The doghouse was, there was the entrance defect, then there was a possible entrance defect. It was like a really small hole, no projectile recovered, and then there was a projectile entered the lower middle area, the southeast exterior side, exited the interior side, and entered the bedding, and the projectile was previously collected from the bedding.
Okay, so it says a flight path rod was placed through defects 1 and something.
I think that's I and I-1.
I and I-1.
Yes.
Okay. And was documented with photographs. You've seen those photographs?
I have.
An angle finder determined the vertical angle of the... You know, I'm just reading. I'm not leading him. I'm reading the document that's in evidence. I'm publishing it.
All right.
Thank you. An angle finder determined the vertical angle of the flight path to be approximately 76 degrees, and a protractor, protractor, and a plumb bob determined the horizontal angle to be approximately 84 degrees. Is that right?
Yes.
Was that inconsistent with the photographs you saw taken by Agent Worley of her performing those tests?
I think it's off the horizontal angle, I think, was off a degree.
A degree, right. Based on the photograph.
Right.
But you weren't there.
No.
So you're looking at a photograph and saying it's off a degree, but maybe she had a better perspective. Could she had a better perspective than you did than what you saw in the photograph?
Yes.
Okay. Small animal cage. That says defect J, projectile entered the exterior side of the cardboard on the southwest end of the cage, exited the interior sides of the cardboard and the chicken wire. Defect J1 traveled through chicken wire on the back wall of the cage and entered the southeast wall of the workshop. Defect J2 exited the interior side of the workshop wall. Defect J and struck a vertical shelf beam that was perpendicular to the wall. A flight path rod was placed through defects J to J2, was documented with photographs, and angle finder determined the vertical angle of the flight path to be approximately 87 degrees and the horizontal approximately 41 degrees. And is that consistent with the photographs you saw?
Yes, except for the one that's 3 degrees.
Right, and that's then, 3 degrees.
And then there was one with 1.5, and again, for the reasons
I've stated. And that's why we see the two paths. You do one at 1.5, one at 3. Now, in any of this, did you read anything about a... not quite done yet. No, I'm done with that one. But about ricochet or any biologic material on anything or anything that indicated pass through a person or a wall or anything. Was there anything recorded by their agent that would indicate any of that? That was collected by their agents that would indicate any of that?
No.
Okay. Now, what do you know what this is?
This is Agent Worley's drawing of the window.
Okay. And what does it indicate?
It indicates the seven buckshot pellets that pass through the window.
Okay. How about let's see the other one. What is it?
It's another drawing showing where the seven buckshot pellets went through the window.
Okay, one from inside, one from outside?
Or yes.
One? Okay.
Yes.
So there are seven buckshot, and which one of these is the one you measured through?
If that's the outside?
Yeah. Maybe it is.
I measured through a defect B1, which would be the upper leftmost.
Exterior side, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So I went through B1.
Okay. And is this consistent with what you saw?
Yes.
Okay. So you didn't get to look at this until October, correct?
Of 22.
Right. Now, these drawings, their examination was done in June and July of 21, within a month of the murders, correct?
Yes.
And what you had to go on basically was photographs, right?
Objection to the leading room.
What, if anything, did you have to rely on to do the analysis?
Well, the information and data that SLED collected.
I'm sorry, who collected it?
SLED.
Okay, and?
Right, because they were there very early on and I was not, and then also went and took a look at the physical evidence, and I found some stuff there that was helpful to my investigation itself. So it wasn't 100% based on SLED, but a lot of this information came directly from SLED.
Okay, do you know when Alec Murdaugh was charged with murder? Was it July of 22?
I don't remember.
But at some point, over a year after the murder?
Yes.
Okay. And you were retained and got out there within 90 days of his arrest, correct?
Yes.
But they waited over a year to arrest him, correct?
Yes.
So my question is, I mean, these issues raised, would the ammo that you use for your sound testing, whether you were using the same brand or some different brand, did it make any difference?
No.
Objection, no basis in his expertise.
What, if any, difference would it have made in the acoustical issues you were testing? Different ammo.
Same objection.
None. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Your Honor. Was he able to answer? I'm sorry. Was he able
yes.
to answer that?
Objection was overruled. Your answer.
Thank you.
It makes no difference. All the shotguns are right in the same range. It doesn't matter. The rifles are in the same range. Weapons of this type are not loud enough to be heard inside the house from that distance with all the variables.
Okay, you were also asked a question about how loud the sound was if you went in a laboratory. The length of the distance you said was between the kennels and the house, outside the house, and I think you said, was it 100 decibels?
Yes, it's about like 103, 104.
Okay, and he went to a chart saying that would be like a airplane at 300 meters?
Yes.
Would you be able to hear that inside the house?
Depends on what's going on inside the house, but, you know, at that level, you would just... I don't want to, it's been a long day, but it depends on where the energy of the sound is in what's called octave bands and one-third octave bands. In other words, the sound of a gunshot is different than the sound of a jet airplane because it's not the same noise. So there's more to the question, but even if you, basically if apples to apples, if you had that level of noise outside, which it wasn't because it wasn't a laboratory setting, it was actually only about 85 decibels outside the house, which would have been audible if you're outside. You could be a couple miles away and hear these gunshots if you were outside.
So if you were a couple miles away and you were outside, not inside a house, you could hear those shots.
You could, yes. As long as there's not a lot of traffic or you're not cutting the grass, if it was quiet and you're outside, you could hear those gunshots. You just can't hear them in the house.
Can't hear them in the house. Now, did you find any data any reports, anything you looked at for SWEG, that they did any of the trajectory calculations that you did?
No.
They did a computer simulation, right?
Or a scan. They scanned the same way I did.
And then when you look at it, we saw it 4 weeks ago, there's a sort of a
flaw. Objection sustained.
Did they do, what if any FARO did they do, FARO computer generated? Did they do one?
All I know is that they did scan the scene in July, just like I did, but I have not yet seen anything from them using their scan.
And did they, again, not again, but I want to make sure I understand this. They got the information, strike that. What if any information, what if any trajectory computations that they do, SWED, the state, any FBI, anybody hired by these guys over here, do on trajectory? Did you see anything?
No.
So the first time anybody's done any trajectory calculations is you, and as you indicated, we were going through that PowerPoint last night trying to make sure it was understandable. But sort of, one last question. Was there anything to prevent SWED, FBI, anybody from doing the same calculations you did? Well, just two last questions. That you did, anything preventing them? Do they have any, what if any, obstacles were there to SWED or FBI or one of these private people they hired doing the same thing you did?
None.
And let me get this straight. He kept talking about children 5'2". Young lady, stand up. That's a clerk in my office. She's 5'3".
So, objection is sustained.
She's not a child. That's all I'm trying to point out. Based on your calculations and based on the assumption that somebody would be holding the rifle either at their hip or at their shoulder in a way in which you could operate that weapon, what, if any, opinion do you have as to whether that person could be Alec Murdaugh shooting into that quail pen?
It can't be.
Thank you.
I know you just answered that question, but it could be anyone on that those green lines. Is that right? Your green lines that you drew could be anyone along that green line.
That is correct.
Could be anyone who could fit along that green line. Is that true?
The weapon is on the green line. And then so, as I've tried to explain before, the next thought process is that, okay, for people with different sizes, what did they have to do to put their hands on the weapon to fire it?
Thank you.
While it's sitting on that green line.
So to be clear, is that a yes? Anyone on that green line? As long as this gun travels on that green line, it would fit anyone on that green line?
That is correct.
Thank you. And if you were down at the kennels when a shotgun was shot and a 300 Blackout was shot, if you were down at the kennels, would you have heard it?
Yes.
No further questions.
You step down. Ladies and gentlemen, that be it for this day. We'll resume at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Looking at it, it's almost 5:30 now. We'll resume at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Please do not discuss the case. Have a good evening. You just hold still while the jurors leave, since it's taking you a while to get up.
That wraps up that segment of coverage here in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. There is more to come. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage on this case or any of the cases we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.